Groundhog! Groundhog! Stand, old Ivy, stand firm and strong. Grand, old Ivy, hear the cheering gong. Stand, old Ivy, and never yield. Rip, rip, rip that chipmunk off the field. When
you fall on the... John Larroquette has certainly succeeded in show business, and his latest success is his Broadway debut in the 50th anniversary revival of How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, which has earned him a Tony Award for Best Featured Actor in a Musical, to go along with the 5 Emmys he's won for his TV work. The show, which also stars Daniel Radcliffe, is on stage at the Al Hirschfeld Theater on West 45th Street, and I'm very pleased to welcome Mr. Larroquette to our show today. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
And congratulations on the Tony. Does it make you feel like you shouldn't have waited so long to go into a Broadway show?
Well, you know, I guess that you could say that, but I mean, quite, I think, honestly, the timing had never been appropriate for me to come to New York. I've often said that I had the high-class problem of being on a series or other for the past 25 years, and in order to give a year to New York, a series had to be canceled, and it never was.
Well, you were in an off-Broadway play last year, Oliver Parker. Did that experience inspire you to move over to Broadway?
It was part of the plan. When the last series that I did, Boston Legal, was imminently going to be canceled, I asked my representation, let's not pursue television for a while. Let me go to New York and meet people. And I came to New York and met with producers, Jeffrey Riches, Bill Haber, who used to be an agent of mine at CAA, and other people around town, Miller Boyette, and, you know, those guys, and said, you know, I'm not going to go after television, so just to let you know if there's any way. And then Elizabeth Merriweather's play came across my desk, Oliver, which was the title then, Oliver, and I thought it would be a good way to bite a little of New York off and chew it, to go downtown, under the radar, the Cherry Lane, and experience it.
And we're seeing more and more productions which have limited runs because people then have to go back to the TV series. But I wonder what's worse, to know that you're going to be canceled or to be in something like Night Court, which runs for 9 seasons, and after a while you must have felt a bit trapped.
I did. I think you always do. I mean, I don't, you know, I don't think anywhere in the job description of acting is the term job security evident. And so when you're on a successful show like that, after about 5 or 6 years, you begin to wonder, is this all I'm ever going to do?
Part and I'm going to win more Emmys. You won 4. Didn't you take yourself out of the running at
one
point?
Yes, I did. And it was also a spinoff offered for the character I played on Night Court to do his own show, much like Kelsey did from Cheers. And I declined that offer not to go into my own series. Because I knew that because of the nature of that character, it was going to be 5 or 6 years before anybody ever offered me a job playing a dad or a nice priest or whatever it might be. And as it turned out, that was true. I mean, every role that came across at that point, except for the John Larroquette show, which I did on my own after Night Court. So I just wanted that character to sort of, you know, become part of the television landscape, which was great because he was a great character, but to recede into my resume somewhere.
And then we did have the John Larroquette show, The Happy Family, Boston Legal, The Practice. You won another Emmy there, a lot of guest roles. So you were able to break out of the typecasting. But now you're doing song and dance. Do you enjoy taking on new challenges?
Yes, indeed. And the idea of coming to New York, as I said, has always been a goal. For what actor it isn't a goal. But I never worked in New York. I didn't start acting here. I went right to Los Angeles. I was working in San Diego when I decided to pursue acting. And I euphemistically say the first time I came to New York was to host Saturday Night Live, and that's not completely untrue. So I don't have any history of it. And to be here in this community is a revelation to me. You know, and
we're nicer than you thought.
Excuse me.
People will tell you how to get to 43rd Street.
People are very, very nice. I find that they are considerate and efficient and not necessarily effusively loving, but proficiently loving. So to be here, and my wife loves it, the first city she lived in when she came from England in the late 60s. So she has connections here as well. But it's great to be on the stage here.
Well, how'd you get involved in this production? Was Daniel Radcliffe already attached to it?
He was. Last August, I think, it came to my attention after I had come here and met with people And all of a sudden, here was this offer to be on stage with Daniel Radcliffe, one of the, you know, biggest movie stars on the planet Earth. And I thought, this character is pretty much in my wheelhouse. There isn't a great deal of singing and dancing, so I could probably fake my way through that. And the comedy seemed pretty evident. The play seemed pertinent, which was interesting to me. After all of these years, it still seemed salient. A lot of it's comedy. The lyrics are very funny. And so I jumped at the chance.
And you're about a foot taller than Daniel. Just seeing the two of you standing side by side becomes a kind of a running sight gag.
It is.
Perfect
it is.
Casting. Was that one of the things they thought about? You'd be a perfect foil?
I would hope so. I know that Jimmy Burrows, a famous television director who actually directed the pilot episode of Night Court, and who I've known for that many years.
Known to the rest of us as James Burrows.
James Burrows. You know, his, I don't know, you know, I still don't know this connection. Father or grandfather was Abe Burrows, who wrote this play. And so he had a bit of a say in the casting of this. And I have to thank him probably partly for this role as well. But, you know, I don't think anybody thought, oh, let's get a really big guy to stand next to Dan. I can't imagine anybody would have that kind of logic. You know, it just happened that I'm 6'5", and Dan is not.
You played J.B. Bigley, the boss of the Worldwide Wicked Company, the company that J. Pierpont Finch, Radcliffe, worms his way into. Had you seen other actors portray the role before you took it on?
I've seen two. Obviously, I saw – not obviously, but I saw Rudy Valli in the movie when I was a youngster.
He did it wonderfully, didn't he?
Yes, he did. And I saw – my wife and I were in New York for something, and then we saw the Matthew Broderick revival, and I'm afraid I must plead ignorance to not remembering that character at all in that production. I remember Matthew, and I remember his wife, Sarah, was playing Rosemary. Excuse me. But I don't remember much else of the show, quite honestly.
So you weren't influenced by the performance?
That is true. I was not. And I wasn't influenced by Rudy either. I mean, I knew that – I wanted to find a different kind of comedy with this character. Excuse me. And because I could only find the comedy that I know. And so for the first 2.5 or 3 weeks of rehearsal, I really concentrated on the singing part and the dancing part so that I didn't completely embarrass myself in that, because I knew the comedy would come.
One actor once told me, an actor who sang rather well, that he'd never acted before, but he's an actor, so he was playing somebody who sings.
That's right. And the David Chase, the musical director, once said that to me, and it meant a lot. It got me off the hook, was that you have to sing like J.B. Bigley. You don't have to sing like John LaRoquette. Mm-hmm. You can sing like J.B. Bigley and dance like J.B. Bigley. And so he's not Tommy Toon, nor is he Rudy Valli. He is his own man.
He's a kind of unusual boss in that he knits for relaxation.
Yeah.
Was that perhaps even stranger 50 years ago than it is today? Because there are a number of men who you see knitting.
Yes. I mean, you know, what professional football players do that now, right?
Did you have to learn how to knit?
You know, I'm not going to sit here and say that.
You'd have to fake it.
You know, I was shown how to do it so that I could wrap the yarn around the needle correctly and sort of move it toward. But I mean, there's only, you know, 3 or 4 seconds each time we see Mr. Bigley playing with his knitting that I actually have to, you know, pretend I'm actually doing it. But.
Well, we're reminded that the show is 50 years old in numbers like Happy to Keep His Dinner Warm, about secretaries just wanting to get married, and a secretary is not a toy, and Bigley has a mistress, Hetty LaRue, played by Tammy Blanchard, who's almost a stereotypical bimbo. Was there any discussion in rehearsal about how to get the right tone on those things, especially considering changed attitudes about sexual politics?
You know, I think because of the body of the play, if you decide to do that play, you have to do it as that's what you're doing today.
Because it's also a historic thing.
It is that. And, you know, and I find that, you know, when I was first offered the role, I thought, does this play at all stand up? Is the comedy, first of all, stale? Is it like a really, really old Neil Simon that doesn't quite work? Not that Neil Simon's plays don't work if you do them right. But reading it, I realized that, you know, it's in some ways even more pertinent, the way we think about corporations today. I don't think in 1960 half of America would understand the word corporation if you just went out on the street and talked about it.
Supreme Court still hasn't figured it out.
There you are. And so we decided to leave all that stuff in. The fact that we left in there's a line, you could have let me finish my metrical, the fact that we left the word metrical in there. There were some other things that we just left. So I think and I had nothing to do with that. That's Rob Ashford, the director's job, to leave it as the piece as it was written and just do it and know that it was done somewhat tongue-in-cheek then when it was made, and to continue that.
My guest is John Larroquette, who is starring in a new production of How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. You mentioned Rob Ashford. He not only directed, he also choreographed. Yeah. And I've read that Daniel Radcliffe took dance lessons for a year to prepare for the role.
Yes.
Did you take any dance lessons?
Once I got here, yes. I started taking voice lessons immediately in Los Angeles with Eric Vitra, one of the best voice coaches in the world, as soon as I found out I was going to do it, because you know, my body, I've used my body a lot in my work, my comedy. I'm tall. I used to be very lanky and thin, and so I could use my body well. So the dancing, I thought, well, as long as I can get the beats down, fine. But the singing was something that I never approached. I was a musician as a child in New Orleans, but played, so I never sang. So I wanted
to concentrate. What instrument did you play?
Reeds, clarinet, saxophone. You know, New Orleans, you're born with a clarinet in your crib, I think.
Or a cornet or a
trumpet. Or a cornet, yes. In my case, it was a clarinet because of my love for Pete Fountain. But so I never sang, and that was the most embarrassing part, was to try and, you know, and I'm not tone deaf. I was a musician. Both my sons are musicians. My wife has a beautiful singing voice, so I know pitch, but I was just, I was petrified to do that. As a matter of fact, I came home one day and actually told Elizabeth, I said, you know, I think they might fire my ass. I mean, I'm not sure I can do this. I was very insecure, and I'm not usually insecure when I work.
And it's worked out fine.
It has indeed.
In fact, there's a number that you do with Daniel called Grand Old Ivy that's just hilarious.
It's funny. You know, it's very funny. And it's the first place in the play where he and I really have anything to do with each other. And it kicks the play into another gear, I think.
It was nominated for 8 Tonys, but you're the only one who won. And Daniel wasn't nominated, which a lot of people thought was unfair. But you know, one of the plays I thought that was really deserved a Tony, didn't get anything. The Mother with a Hat. I don't know if you have any opportunity to see other things that are around, because you're working pretty much the same time those other shows.
That's exactly right. I saw a couple of plays before we start, during rehearsal, because we were off at night, and my wife and I got to see Vanessa Redgrave and James Earl Jones, and I got to see House of Blue Leaves, and I got to see the opening night of Born Yesterday. But
they're all closed.
They're all closed. But we have a great favor next after the 4th of July. Daniel has to be in London for promotion for the ultimate Harry Potter film. So, and for Warner Brothers to get him, Warner Brothers has kind of bought the house. So we were closed, but we're fine. So that those 2 days, I'm going to try and get to see a few things. I want to see Norman Butts in Catch Me If You Can, and
incredible.
I would love to see Mark Rylance in Jerusalem. So those two
amazing
things are right. My wife has seen Jerusalem already. My wife is English, so she identified with that a lot. But we're going to go see it together.
Do awards have any bearing on the length of a run?
I don't think in my particular case, no. I think if something gets a Tony for Best Play or Best Musical, it certainly would, I believe, entice other people who may not have, who are on the fence about which show to see, if they can only afford to go see one or two, to go see a Tony winner.
And is this an open run?
Theoretically, I suppose, although Mr. Radcliffe and my obligations are done in January of 2012.
Mm-hmm. And do you have something else you're going to do? You want to go back to TV, or would you like to do more Broadway?
You know, I think like Michelle Bachmann, I will qualify that by saying I would love to do more Broadway. Here
like
on
Michelle.
Your show, Leonard. I announced I am running.
Any casting directors out there, John Larroquette is open to any kind of offer. But right now, wait a little while, because this is a big hit.
It's wonderful. It's you know, and so much of the kudos have to go to Daniel, because of his stature as a movie star, and particularly in that franchise, has brought in a young audience to the theater who many, and I ask them, because I go outside at night and sign autographs, and so many of the young people there have never been to a theater before, have never seen a musical certainly before, and are just enthralled by it. And so I think he is helping cultivate a brand new audience to the theater by doing this.
John Larroquette, co-starring with Daniel Radcliffe in How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. It's at the Al Hirschfeld Theater on West 45th Street. It's that theater that's actually across 8th Avenue, unlike so many of the other ones that are between 7th and 8th.
That's true.
And it's been a great pleasure talking with you.
Thank you, Leonard. Pleasure being here.
My pleasure, rain or shine, hot or cold, wealth far beyond all measure. Maybe here, in my hands I hold. But where will I find that one treasure of treasure?